Okay, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the We're Having a Good Time podcast. My name's Dusty Slay. I'm your host, and I'm pumped to be here. What a great day. It's a Tuesday. I know this is a Thursday that it's coming out, but it's a Tuesday today when I'm filming, and I feel good. I've not eaten bread for about a month and a half, and my body feels good. You know, I don't feel like all my digestive issues are solved, but I feel like it's made a huge difference. Not eating bread, not eating sugar. Now, sure, I'm probably having some sugar here and there. I'm probably having some wheat here and there, you know. It's not been perfect. I had fried chicken on Saturday. I had someone say to me that. They said, I told them I had not eaten bread in a month. And then they saw me eating a fried chicken finger. And they go, does that not count as bread? And I go, well, yeah. I mean, technically. But it's not like eating a sandwich. You know, I went to some places and people recommended me, corned beef sandwiches, pastrami sandwiches, Reubens, things that I love. I went back to Richmond, Virginia, and I knew the restaurant that had the greatest sandwich in the world no longer had that sandwich. So I didn't even search it out. But I'm sure there were other places. I've not had one of those. I've not had a hamburger. I've not had a sandwich of any kind, a wrap, anything like that. The fried chicken, there's probably some wheat in there, but it's not a heavily breaded chicken. And I'm not trying to not eat bread like I don't eat pork, right? Like when I say I don't eat pork, I don't eat regular marshmallows because it has pork, it's made with pork gelatin. You have to find kosher marshmallows, which are made with fish gelatin. And believe me, everybody thinks that's weird. But kind of once you discover that marshmallows are made with pork gelatin, you almost don't even want to eat marshmallows anymore. You know what I mean? Not that I'm eating a lot of marshmallows out here, but you know what I mean? It's like, that's disgusting. Even fish gelatin, it's like, what? You're putting weird animal gelatins in there? It's like gummy bears, all that kind of stuff. Even organic gummy things are made with gelatins from animals. And, you know, sometimes I'll make a bone broth. I went to the farmer's market, and the beef stand at the farmer's market will sell bones, random bones of the cow, frozen, that you can make soups out of. So I bought some bones. I put some herbs in there, some water, and I brought it to a boil and then let it steep for about, 18 hours, something like that. The lady told me she would do it for 24 hours, but I let it go for 18, and it was delicious. But once you eat some of it and then put it in the fridge, and it congeals like jello. So you see that gelatin, and I'm okay with it because once you heat it back up, it goes to soup. It's supposed to be really healing for the stomach, good for the joints, helps build your own collagen back up. And you eat that, but you see it all jelly-like, and you go, ugh, that's in a marshmallow? That's in a gummy bear? And that's disgusting. I think that is so gross. Marshmallows are kind of gross anyway. I used to like them. You know what I used to like? And I probably still like them. But homemade Rice Krispie Treats. My goodness. Me and my sister used to make homemade Rice Krispie Treats. Just Rice Krispies, just marshmallows. People nowadays make them. They want to throw Fruity Pebbles and Fruit Loops in there. I'm like, no, no, no. You're throwing it off. just marshmallows and Rice Krispies. It's delicious. Even they started making Rice Krispies like pre-made that you could buy in the store and that you just open them up and that not the same. You need a good, hot, homemade Rice Krispie. Gosh, that's good. We used to tear that up. I guess you want butter in there, too. You need butter in the pan so that it doesn't stick. Me and my sister used to make a cheese dip. This was growing up in the trailer park. We probably had margarine. It was country crock in a tub. And we would take, and then we would take American cheese slices. And then we would, you know, tear it up and put a little of that country crock margarine in there and put that in the microwave for 30 seconds to a minute and let it melt and then eat that as a hot cheese dip with Lay's potato chips. It's delicious. But that is how I grew up, which is probably why my stomach is bad. I think my sister also has a fair amount of stomach problems. The only person in my family that doesn't seem to have any kind of stomach problems at all is my mom. My mom, eats pretty bad. She listens to the podcast, but she does eat pretty bad. My mom eats a lot of gummy bears. She'll make trips and eat a lot of gummy bears, but she seems to have no problems. She's in her 70s. She gets around great. She's like you would not know she's that age at all. And we speculate that it's because my mom grew up probably eating. Her mom and dad had a garden always, and she probably grew up just eating great food. So the first half of her life, at least, she was eating great food. It was later all the processed stuff rolled in on us, and then I grew up on the processed stuff. And I don't blame anybody, right? I don't think anybody knew any better. I always think about this. My mom and dad both grew up a farming lifestyle, so it was probably hard. It was hard all the time out in the garden. I enjoy the garden, but I don't have to live by the garden. But everybody had to be out there, and they had to work so hard. So when canned stuff started to roll in, they were like, oh, this is so much easier. You mean I can get a thing of canned corn? And I don't have to actually grow corn. So it's like, yeah, it seems like everybody was like, oh, this is so much easier. I never want to go back to the old way. There are a lot of old ways that I would like to go back to, but I don't think the one of them I know that I don't want to go back to is not having a washing machine for your clothes. People would talk about spending an entire day every week. An entire day every week of washing and scrub, washing on a washboard, wringing out clothes, and then hanging them up to dry. I'll tell you, we moved into this house and there was a washer and dryer already in here. We left our washer, which we had bought a couple of years ago, which we really liked. But this one they had a washer here. And the washer, there's something going on with it. I've tried to look it up. I've tried to chat GPT it, and I can't get the answers I need. But it will kind of stop mid-cycle, and you have to go in there and push buttons to get it to go and finish the cycle. It's pretty annoying. It's a brand I've never heard of. It's supposed to be some eco-friendly brand, but it's pretty annoying that you have to put clothes in there, start the washer. Midway, it starts to beep like crazy, and then it stops, and then you have to go in and push some other buttons to get it to finish the cycle. And that's annoying. I've considered buying a new washer just because of that. And I can't imagine having to go back to hand washing my clothes. I think I'd wear two outfits a week. I couldn't handle it. I could not handle it. I already think we're a bit insane about how much we wash clothes. Like, you know, people, you know, you wear pants one time and people wash it. I think people think it's gross, but I don't wash my jeans very often at all. Sometimes my show jeans, I'll show up to the club or the theater and I'll look down at my jeans and I'll go, oh man, there's crap all over these. There's ashes from smoking, or there's, you know, you know, some stain from some food I was eating, and I go, ah, and I got to clean my jeans off in the bathroom before I go out to perform. But I just think, one, I think it ruins your jeans, but two, it just seems unnecessary to constantly wash everything all the time, especially if you're not really sweating. I mean, like clothes that I go out in the garden in and they get real dirty and I get hot and sweaty, sure, go ahead and wash those. But I have show jeans, so I'll put those on, I'll go out, do my show, come back to my hotel, take them off, put on different ones. Sometimes I will just go right to smoking with those jeans on, and that's why I end up with ashes. But for the most part, they're my show jeans. There's no reason to really wash those all the time. That's what I think. But, you know, I am not, this past weekend, oh, let's talk about some places that I'm going to be coming up real quick. Coming up, this weekend I'm off, which is great because I've had a pretty heavy 2 weeks in a row. I'll talk about some of that, but I've had a pretty heavy 2 weeks in a row, heavy for me, that is, but I'll be, Monday, it looks like I'm going to do this thing called Whiskey Jam. Let's see. That's going to be a thing for my agency. My agency also has, like, you know, in Nashville, they have a ton of music acts. So they have a show that they're doing to kind of show off these music acts to it's an outdoor concert series called Whiskey Jam, November 3rd. These are the bands: Midland, Chase Beckham, Dax, Jamie McDonald, John Foster, Solon Holt. I don't know any of those bands, but I'm sure they're great. It's live at Sky Deck, and it's a free show at 6 p.m., and I'll be hosting it. So I've done something like this before. I think a lot of times these labels or these agents will want to show off their bands in a way that, or maybe it's just a free concert, but I think they're kind of like, they'll show off their bands to streaming services and labels and things like that to try to get them gigs or get them picked up. So I'll be there. I'll be hosting that. That'll be fun. And then Friday, November 7th, I'll be in Elkhart, Indiana. That show's almost sold out. Saturday, I'll be in Chicago at the Vic Theater. That show is selling very well. I don't know that it's close to being sold out, but I did that show a couple of years ago, and I've sold way more tickets this year than I did then. And then next weekend, I'm in York, Pennsylvania, and Tysons, Virginia. Then I got a show at Zany's on November 18th. And then I'll be in Wausau, Wisconsin on November 21st and Green Bay, Wisconsin on November 22nd. So that's all my November dates. And I love it. What I'm doing now is I'm just doing Fridays and Saturdays on the road. That's all I'm trying to do. I fly out Friday, do a show, go to another place on Saturday, do a show, come home. That's all I want to do. That is where it's at for me. But I, you know, the last couple of weeks I had a corporate gig one day on a Wednesday up in Owensboro, Kentucky. So I drove up, did that gig. It was a very good corporate gig. So I always say the corporate gigs are good, but sometimes they're not very good. Sometimes they're very hard. They always pay well, so it's not worth criticizing them. And it's not their fault. It's just, you know, you do a corporate gig and it's like for people that are at work and they, you know, they don't want to be there necessarily. They're there, you know, because they got to be there for work. So they're not excited about it. And a lot of them are probably not even comedy fans. And then so when they announce the comic, they're like, ah, it's not Jerry Seinfeld. It's not Kevin Hart. It's not, you know, Sebastian Maniscalco. We don't care. So they can be hard gigs. But, you know, I've done plenty of hard gigs, so it doesn't matter. But this one in Owensboro, Kentucky was actually a good gig. The people were into it, and I had a lot of fun. But it was close enough. I did that gig, and then I drove home. But it was still an extra gig during the week that I normally don't do. And then the next week, I went down to Gainesville, Florida, and did a show. Now, my poster said Gainesville, Virginia, which I didn't catch, and I'm sorry it said that. I don't know why that. I don't even know if there's a Gainesville in Virginia, but I don't know why it said that, and I am sorry about that. If you were confused by that and didn't make the show, I actually was very happy with the turnout. I didn't complain about it, but I joked about it on stage, and it makes it seem like I'm unhappy with the turnout, but it was a giant theater. It was a really big theater, and I sold 600 tickets. I think it was an 1,800-seat theater, but I sold 600 tickets. The last time I was in Gainesville, I think I did a room that was 150 seats, and I think we sold it out. That was a couple years ago. I think we sold it out, but it might have been close. So the fact that I had sold 150 tickets before and now I just sold 600, and this was on a Tuesday night, I was very happy with it. I was like, this is amazing. So I like that. I was sad that I didn't have any more time to spend. I never get to spend any time in Gainesville. I like these college campuses like this, so it would have been fun to hang out a little bit. But there just wasn't the time. And then I just went to Akron, Ohio. I just did one show because, like I say, I was supposed to do Columbus, Ohio on Friday. That venue closed, so I wasn't able to do it. But the Akron show was incredible. It was almost a sold-out show, very close to being sold out, if it wasn't sold out. I don't know that it wasn't. Very close. And I did an hour and a half. And I loved every minute of it. I was just like, this is an incredible show. The energy from the audience was great. You know, the Wilmington and Richmond shows were like that too. The last three shows I've done like this have just been unbelievable. The audiences are really showing up and we're just having a lot of fun. And I love that. I mean, that is what I want to do. I think it often confuses people about comedy. You'll do something and they'll go, well, what's next? You know, what do you want to do? What do you want to do? And it's like, I'm doing the thing that I want to do. I don't know of anything else that I would rather be doing than comedy. Now, there are other things that I will do to hope that it helps drive ticket sales and keep me relevant in comedy and keep this whole thing going, because I want, you know, this comedy machine to keep going. But there's not anything else I'd rather be doing than doing stand-up comedy. It's really unbelievable. I get total freedom to do whatever I want to do, which is also why I don't want to label myself a clean comedian. And why I never recommend kids come to the show. Now, if you want to bring them, that's fine. But the reason I don't recommend it is because I may say something that's not kid appropriate. I never want to be a filthy comic. I'm not trying at all to be a filthy comic. But the reason I don't like labeling myself clean is because it's keeping me from potentially being able to say what I want to say about something. I love it. Anything else that you try to write, anything else that I ever try to write that involves other people, it just becomes, the people that I'm writing it have to approve it, and they have to decide whether it's good or funny before it gets used. Meanwhile, with comedy, I just go out and say whatever I want to say, and if it's not funny, the audience doesn't laugh. And then we can all have a laugh about this thing not being funny. And that, I don't know why anyone would choose anything over that. But they do. And so many people are just trying to use stand-up as a platform to get to something else. And I don't understand it. You know, I do understand if you've been in the game for a while and you're not having major success and you're like, I'd love to do something else. Because if you're not selling tickets, comedy is not as fun. I will admit that. I've had plenty of those days, even though I've still had a blast doing it. As you get older, I can see it not being as fun to continue to do comedy if you're not selling tickets. So I get that. But I just think with social media now, you can find ways to bring that audience to you. I have a very slow building social media, but I enjoy that. It is frustrating sometimes when you see other people pass you. You know, they'll do have a viral video and then they soar past you in fans and followers on the internet. But a lot of times I think that is just internet people. That doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be selling tickets. So that's why I like the slow build, because I do feel like the slow build is your real fans. And that's what I'm into. I want to, I recorded the Nateland podcast yesterday, and there is a little bit of this talk on there. I'm not on the full episode that aired yesterday. I'm not on the full episode because I was doing my Gainesville gig when they filmed that one. They had Leanne Morgan on, and I always miss when Leanne's on, and that's a shame because I am friends with Leanne, and I'd love to be on the podcast when she's there. But I was doing my own gig, so I wasn't able to do it. But yesterday we filmed a little intro to that, and we talked about this and about the NBA. I don't know how many saw this, but the NBA got in trouble for a whole gambling and throwing games type of thing. And I made this post. I just made this. One morning I was just sitting around, and I don't know what made me make this post. But I just decided to do it. And I said, legal gambling ruins sports. It's time to stop supporting these rigged games, save your money, and spend it on live comedy. We're having a good time. I did that tweet. And then later that day, or maybe it was even before, I'm not going to say my tweet was before, but I didn't see it, that, sports gambling, it had come out that the NBA was doing a lot of shady stuff. Now, I watched several videos on it, and I got quite a few details, but I don't remember them all. So I don't have all the details, but you know, basically it was players, coaches, former players, the mafia, all getting involved. They were having gambling events outside of basketball where they were bringing in current players into these card games, these poker games, and they were rigging the poker games. So these millionaire basketball players would go play poker. They would get recruited to go play in these poker games, and then they would go and lose a bunch of money, and these crime families were using that money that they were essentially robbing from NBA players to fuel their criminal empires. That's what I was seeing. And then, you know, players would have gambling debts, or they knew they could make money by throwing games. So they would intentionally leave games early saying, I'm hurt. Or they would make a lot of bad passes or miss shots on purpose to throw the game. And you know, a few years ago, referees from the NBA got fired and fined and stuff like that for throwing games, for calling back, making bad calls and throwing games. Just recently, I think I had talked about this, but there was an Auburn, Georgia game that took place. And I, you know, all my friends that I grew up with, almost all of them, all the ones that went to college, most of them, they all went to Auburn, right? So they're all Auburn fans. So when I'm on my personal Facebook, I see a lot of people talking about the Auburn games, and they were really talking about this Auburn, Georgia game. Now, I have a lot of Georgia fans that listen, and one of my best friends is a diehard Georgia fan, so I'm not hating on Georgia here. But what they were all saying was there were a lot of awful calls that went Georgia's way. And then later, I read that one of the referees from that game was permanently suspended for that game. Does that mean he did it on purpose? Does that mean he was just incompetent? I don't know. But I think when you add all this up, it's starting to look a lot. And then you know that that gambling is now legal and involved. A friend sent me a picture online. Let's see if I can find this. And It was a picture, and this is from Dugout Report on Instagram. And it says, a stadium wall in 1939 versus an outfield wall in 2025. So in 1939, the building said betting prohibited. And then in 2025, the wall says bet. So gambling is being pushed so hard on society, and it's easier than ever. That's just why I think a lot of stuff in Vegas is going down, because there's no longer any need to go to Vegas to gamble. Morally, I guess I am against gambling. I don't do it myself, but I am for personal choice, right? If that's something you want to do, I don't care, right? I don't care if you gamble. But I think there was a thing before where it was like, I want to make a trip to Vegas. I want to make a trip to Biloxi, and I want to go and do some gambling. I think that would be fun, right? But now you can just do it on your phone. So it's easier than ever. So then all this money starts getting involved. All these different bets could be made. So there's more incentive than ever for people to throw games, for people to rig games, because there's big money on the line. And it just is like, I've completely lost my joy for professional sports and college too. I used to love them. I mean, Hannah's been talking to me about this. She's like, it's pretty miraculous. She said, when we first started dating, when we got married, she's like, you were watching, you would spend your Saturdays watching games, spend Sundays watching games. We would always watch Monday Night Football together. And now a big part of it is that I have kids and I care about my kids, and I have so many other things other obligations that I have that take me away from my kids. And even my own cell phone is a constant distraction for me when I'm hanging out with my family. So I don't have the kind of time to watch a 3-hour football game anymore. And even what I would do in the early days of my daughter being born is I would, you know, kind of record the game and then go watch it at night when they all went to sleep. But at this point, I'm just depriving myself of sleep. And when you feel like the games are fair, then you're watching this ultimate competition. And it makes it really fun because you're like, ooh, I want to see this team, beat this team. Because even if it's my team that I'm cheering for and I see a bad call made that goes in my team's favor, it takes some of the enjoyment out of it for me, because I go, oh, my team will probably win now because this happened, but it's not as fun, you know? And I think it's just taken it from me. Now, I said I think last week that I enjoy that it's taken it from me, and I do enjoy it. Because I don't watch TV shows like that. I don't binge Netflix. Now, I have been doing it a little bit because I've been downloading them, and on planes I'll watch them. But it's just movies. I'm just rewatching movies. But I'm not trying to pretend like I don't waste time in front of a screen. I do. But I'm saying, if I could take one of them away, I'm happy to do it. I've never been that into NBA. I've never been that into baseball. Never been into soccer at all. Never been into hockey at all. But I have been into football for a good, I would say, 17 years. Is that right? Well, you can't count this one. So let's say 16 years. I really started to get into it. Now, I've been watching it my whole life. But I really started to get into it and follow it in 2008. And I think part of that was I was working, I was selling pesticides, so I was on the road a bunch, and I had satellite radio. So I would listen to ESPN radio. I'd listen to Mike and Mike in the morning, and then Colin Cowherd, and then Doug Gottlieb and Scott Van Pelt. Although that would be the full day. And then I would also switch over to another channel and listen to Paul Feinbaum. And I just felt like it was so great. And then ESPN just turned into a total propaganda channel. It used to be, we were just talking about sports, and it was just great. The hosts were funny, and we would really get into it. And then it turned into just total propaganda all the time. And Paul Feinbaum started to go on TV, and his show became less fun and less, because back in the day when it was just in Tuscaloosa, even though it was on satellite radio, it was still taking place in Tuscaloosa, and it just seemed like this cool little niche show that not everybody was listening to. And then it got opened up to the world and just seemed like it was not as fun. And then, you know, as things started to happen, it's like I felt like sports were a good distraction. When things are going on in the world, you go, well, I'm just going to watch some sports and I'm not going to pay attention to all the, you know, the bad things going on in the world. And then you go, oh, now they're talking about the bad things going on in the world, and I don't like that. And I think, you know, comedy can be like that too. Podcasts can be like that. Even my podcast can be like that. Sometimes I talk about stuff like that too. I get it. I get it when people don't like it. I get it when people don't like that I talk about religion a lot. I get it when people go, oh, I miss how fun this podcast used to be when Hannah was on there. I get it. I get it all. And that's why I don't get into politics and stuff like that. But there are things worthy to talk about, and I think it's fun. And I've been saying sports are rigged for a long time. Am I excited that they're rigged? No, I'm not excited. It's ruined it for me. But am I excited that things are coming out showing that it's rigged? Sort of. I'm sort of excited about it because this is what I want to happen, and then this is what I think is going to happen. This is what I want to happen. I want them to go, we found out this was going on, now we fixed it, and we'll be more stringent on punishments going forward. And if somebody is caught cheating, if someone is caught rigging, if the player shouldn't be able to bet on games, I don't know if they're allowed to do that now, but they shouldn't be able to. And if anybody's caught, they kicked out of the league, they're fired, kicked out of the league, and there could be further punishments. And then that deters people from doing it. And then we get back to a good, clean game. But what I think is going to happen is they're going to use this to say, we've cleaned it up, it's fixed now, and then everyone stops paying attention, and it just gets worse, but we all think it's fixed now. And then anytime you bring it up, somebody goes, come on, buddy. They go, come on, buddy, they fixed that. You know, the FBI got involved, and they fixed it, and now everything is fine. It's all, we're all, come on, buddy. Not everything's rigged. Not everything is a conspiracy, buddy. Get your head out of your butt. You know what I mean? That's what it feels like they're going to do. They're going to, so that way people, but this is what it is. This is what everything is. I stopped celebrating Christmas because I don't believe that I should celebrate it because I don't think it's a Christian holiday. I stopped celebrating Easter for the same reasons, right? I'm not mad at people that do it. If you still do it, do it. That's up to you. But I stopped doing it because I don't think that it's a Christian holiday and I should not celebrate it. But people get upset about that, and they don't want to hear that because these holidays have such good nostalgia for them. It reminds them of good times with their family. They have many memories around it, and it's been something they've done their whole life, and they don't want to hear it because you're taking something from them they enjoy. And I think the same thing about sports. Nobody wants to hear it or accept it that these things could be rigged because they love it. They love it too much. You ever see those guys crying about finding out that wrestling is fake? They're going, it's still real to me. And we all make fun of them. We still, to this day, make fun of people who used to think wrestling was real. Well, that's where we're at with all the sports now. I don't think it's as fake as wrestling. It's not scripted. But wrestlers still get hurt. Wrestlers still get banged up. But I don't think it's as, you know, competitive-based as we think it is. I mean, if anything, it's like worse for the players. It sounds like what I'm saying would be like, I'm saying the players are doing it. And I don't think all the players are doing it. But I'm saying it's worse for the players because they're actually out there working really hard trying to win for their team, trying to make money, and it's just being stolen from them by bad calls. I think it's sad. They're giving up a portion of their life. Sure, they're being compensated heavily money-wise, but they're giving up a lot. I mean, a lot of them are giving up the rest of their life, you know, because they'll end up with CTE and stuff like that, and it's just too bad. And what do I know? I don't know anything. The more I learn, the more I realize that I don't know anything. I think that is, it's. I think that about health. By the way, people have been sending me books. I left all the mail that I got in another room, and I'm not going to go get it now, but I'll try to have it for next week. But people have been sending me books, and I appreciate it. I think people think I read more than I do, but I appreciate the books. A lot of health books. I am trying to, you know, just stick with the kind of journey that I'm on with my diet. I feel like I'm on a good path. I haven't had coffee in a while. I go back and forth with coffee. Like, I didn't do it at all for about a week, and then I had 2 days of coffee, and then I felt bad again, and then I've gone back to tea, and I'm starting to feel good. But, you know, coffee cries out to me. It cries out to me. It goes, drink me, drink me. I'm still getting caffeine. It's not as if I'm not getting caffeine withdrawals and headaches because I'm doing caffeinated teas. I'm doing green teas, and I have an anti-inflammatory tea that's got turmeric some kind of caffeinated tea in it. And I feel good drinking it. Another thing I'm doing is I'm taking cacao, turmeric, maple syrup, almond milk, and water, diluting the almond milk a bit, and I'm not boiling it in a pot, but heating it up in a pot and stirring it. Also a little black pepper, because you need that to help activate and absorb the turmeric. And I'm making a hot chocolate with that, and it's delicious, and it really makes me feel good. I feel like what I need sometimes is just something to soothe and cool my body off. And I think that's what this drink does. And I also, I've been working out a lot. I'm not like, you know, really like trying to get jacked, but I've been working out, doing a bit of lifting, 20 push-ups a day in addition to that. 20 push-ups a day is my new thing. I'm doing at least 20 push-ups every day, no matter what, no matter what else workout I do. 20 push-ups every day. And then I'm walking a lot on the treadmill. So that's what I'm into. 20 push-ups a day, every day, no matter what. And then in addition, I'll do other workouts. But even if I don't get those workouts in, I still get the 20 push-ups in. And that feels good because I'm going to tell you, when I was at the height of feeling bad about a month ago, I did 10 push-ups and I thought I was going to die. I was like, that was so hard on me. It wasn't that I didn't necessarily have the strength, but just physically felt hard on my body. Now I do 20. I won't say it's easy, but I don't feel like I'm going to die after I do it. And I'm able to knock it out. And I know that's not a lot. I know people can just bust out 50, no problem. My friend Vince Fabra busted out about 40 just on me out of nowhere. And I was like, geez, dude. But from where I was at to where I'm at now, I feel very good. And it's, you know, the health journey. I think we're all going through a health journey. I make fun of the guys on Nateland for eating McDonald's all the time. But my wife reminded me that she goes, well, you have all these stomach problems. She goes, if you didn't have the stomach problems, you probably would be eating that stuff too. And that may be true. That may be true. Although when I quit drinking, I went through a total life change. Because I was getting very overweight. So I went through a total life change. I don't want to be overweight. It's bad for you. And I know people struggle with it. And, you know, that's why there's no need to make jokes about it. But I don't want to be that. You know what I mean? I'm trying to keep it together, keep it fit out here. But anyway, I just want to say, I say all that to say, I was right about gambling. And so I was right about gambling and sports being rigged. And that feels good. And I think, I don't think I'm right about everything, but I'm right about a lot of things. And if people would just pay attention out here, it's like we have to give up our nostalgia in order to focus on the future and make sure that we do have a future. I just read a thing. It was a tweet. It was whatever you call post on X now. And I retweeted it. But I've known this about BlackRock, Blackstone, Vanguard, all these companies that run our country and potentially the world now. They're involved in everything. They're an investor in everything. They have deep pockets and their money is in everything. But they go around and they buy up everybody's houses. When you go to sell a house, they'll come in and buy it. It almost happened to us buying this house. I don't know that it was BlackRock that was doing it. But an example they gave in this tweet was exactly what happened to us. Excuse me. But somehow, the deal fell through. And we got the house, which is very exciting. And because I've known several people that try to buy houses and then all of a sudden somebody comes in and someone makes an offer for way over what the asking price is and they'll say no inspection and we'll pay cash. And most people that are trying to sell their house are like, I'm just going to take this money. And I get it, but my HOA, we came together, which, you know, I make jokes about my HOA all the time, and they were a little annoying to me, and they had begun to increasingly get more annoying, which is where it really started to come from with me. But in the beginning, I liked the HOA because they helped maintain a nice neighborhood. I think that if you're going to live that close to people, it is nice to kind of have some overseer in the mix go, hey, you can't live like this next to this. You can't live like trash next to this other guy. And sometimes you drive through neighborhoods and you go, it's clear they don't have an HOA because some houses look very nice and some are totally trashed. And we all came together and voted that no one could buy houses in the neighborhood just to turn them into a rental house. I was grandfathered in, so I could, you know, rent out my house if I wanted to. But I didn't want to do that to my neighbors because that's what my neighbor across the street for me did to us. We had a very nice neighborhood where we knew everyone. And then my neighbor rented out her house and those people were totally fine. They kept to themselves. They didn't bother anybody, but they weren't very friendly and it just ruined the vibe for me. I don't mean they did anything rude, but you know, it in that house when I moved in was people that eventually became our friends. They're still our friends now. They sold to another lady, and then she moved in, her and her boyfriend, and I became friends with them. I liked them. I hung out with them, and then they broke up. He moved away, and she stayed there, but she got a new boyfriend. He became my friend. They were my friends, and so it's like I'm out in the yard doing yard work. She's out in the yard doing yard work. We chat a little bit. It's fun. It's neighborhood vibes, and then she rented her place out. And then it just like, I don't know, just kind of ruined that vibe for me. But I say all that to say, you know, I could have rented my house out, but I didn't want to. Actually, I want the money to try to pay off the new house that we just bought. But, you know, these companies can't come in and just buy up the whole neighborhood now. So I was able to sell to a regular family. People that just, they said they just want to be closer to their daughters that live in Nashville. And I'm like, so I just got to sell to a normal couple. Hopefully, who knows? But hopefully, just a normal couple. And I love that. And we didn't also, you know, we were, I don't want to just make it sound like we're holier than thou out here. We were a little concerned that the market was not as good and that we wouldn't be able to sell. So this was the first offer. And we liked it, and we took it. But I didn't want to let greed get in the way of potentially selling. So we were like, yeah, let's sell to this family. this is not exactly what we were asking for, but we like it. Regular people can move into this house and own the home. We get to make our money because the price went way up since we bought it. So we got to make our money and everybody wins here. But they say these companies, they go in and they buy up houses and then they essentially sell them to themselves. They'll have several companies. So they buy a house in a neighborhood and then they sell it to themselves for double the price, which means people's property value go up, but it also means their property taxes go up. So their taxes become so high that they, you know, they can't afford to live there anymore. And the governments don't care. Our governments don't care about us because if property taxes go up, the government's like, great, we get more money. Everything's a win. So these corporations and our governments go hand in hand. And everybody tries to go, oh, well, that's what capitalism is. And it's like, that's not what capitalism is. I mean, that, you know, we should have some type of, you know, rules and restrictions out here that corporations can't just do this to us. But, you know, no one cares. No one cares. And that's why I think it's important that we turn off our TVs and stop watching football and start paying attention. I don't know that he would even do anything to start paying attention, but it just feels like it would help. Okay. So, yeah, it's depressing. I know. The world's depressing out here. That's why Jesus. That's why we have Jesus. Because, you know, the Bible told us, hey, it's going to get depressing out here. But in the end, it's all good. Let's see. I was trying to read something that I wrote here, but that doesn't make sense. Yeah, I don't know. Like I wrote this down. It said, on a flight, it says, they say, use your life raft only if you're told to do so. Okay, all right. They say, and I said, can you imagine if we just used it on our own? Like, I know we're about to crash. That's pretty funny. I don't know why that's written down. Oh, this is under the joke section. This is not under the podcast section. Let's see what we got. Oh, I wanted to tell people to fast. I think fasting, listen, I'm not telling you this from a medical standpoint. Don't fast and then die and then try to sue me because you're like, a comedy podcast that I listened to that stopped being funny a long time ago told me to fast and I got sick and now I want to sue him. It's not medical advice. It's spiritual advice. I think we should fast. I think as a podcast family, as a we're having a good time podcast family, if we all decided on a date in the future that we were all going to take a day to fast together and pray, I think that would be very good. I think that would be very powerful. I don't know if you're interested in that, but I'm going to look at a date and I'm going to just throw the date out there. Let me know if you're interested in this. Let me know a date that you think that would be good, that we just go, all right, we're going to fast on this day. You know, maybe sometime in between Thanksgiving and Christmas, because I've been seeing a lot of memes like this. These are people that I follow that are not necessarily into the germ theory, that don't necessarily think germs are what's causing our sicknesses. I know a lot of people disagree with this, but basically what they're saying is we go through Halloween where we eat a bunch of candy, and then we go through Thanksgiving where we overeat and we eat a bunch of pies and breads. And then we go to Christmas where we eat a bunch of cookies and cakes and more breads and pies. And then we go into New Year's where we drink like there's no tomorrow. And then we have what we call flu season. We go, everybody's getting it now. But what they're proposing is that we've just put our bodies through a health risk gauntlet, and then our bodies start to detox. So we start to have the flu, but it's our bodies detoxing. Now, I don't know if there's any truth to this. I don't know if, you know, I don't understand any of it, so I don't know if it's true. But I thought, what if we had some kind of fast day in between Thanksgiving and Christmas that would be good for our bodies in general, and then we just prayed. I mean, we could come up with something to pray about that maybe BlackRock would go out of business or something that we just, you know, we just pray about something. But whatever it may be, and then we all fast that day. I think a lot of people have never fasted before, so I think it would be too much to go, let's do a three-day fast. I've never done a three-day fast. I've done a couple of two-and-a-half-day fasts, but never successfully done a three-day one. I've done a week of juices only. I've done a juice fast, but that's a little different. But I want to propose that idea, see if people are into it. But I do want to encourage people to fast. Even myself, I want to encourage myself to fast more. Let's see. I saw this quote, and I think they've really tried to make this quote seem deep, and I've pondered it a bit, and I just don't know that it's that deep. It says, the death of perfection is the birth of momentum. And I like it because I think we can all do this sort of thing where we go, well, I want to get things just right. I don't want to make moves on something until I've got it down just right. When if we say it doesn't have to be perfect, let's just do it, then we have momentum. Now we're moving. Now we're getting it done. And I think there is something to that. I mean, around the house, I'll do projects. I'll do woodworking projects where I had my desk was a little cluttered. And I was, it's actually a lot cluttered, but I thought, you know, if I had a little shelf here, I could fit a few of these things under this shelf. And then I would have, you know, places to put stuff on top of the shelf. So I would maximize my space. So I found some old wood in the garage. I did some measuring. A lot of people say measure twice, cut once. I've always been of the motto, measure once, not that well, and then cut as many times as you need to get it right, which is the wrong way to go about it. But that's what I do. And so I got the wood. I found the wood in the garage, and then I measured once, and then I did the cutting, and I got the shelf. And I liked it. It looked good. I set it up. And then the things I needed to go under the shelf wouldn't fit because I measured it incorrectly. But then I realized that I had bought these little feet to go on another table I built the other day. And the package came with way more feet than what I needed. So I was able to put these feet on the shelf that I just built. And it was enough to lift the shelf up to get what I needed under there. But I think that if I had just been going, I got to get it just right. It's got to be perfect. Everything's got to be perfect. Then I might not have even built the shelf because the wood is old and it doesn't really match my desk, but it does serve its purpose. And I think there is something to that. I don't know how that would apply to people in their everyday life, but I just think with everything, it's like, oh, I got an email from a guy. I didn't even read his email back to me. I got really mad at him. And I didn't mean to get that mad at him, but I was just very insulted by it. Because last week at the end of my podcast, I said to people to, you know, just pray. Just if you, you know, if you're you're lost, you're not feeling good, just talk to God. Just talk to God, talk to Jesus and be saved. Then he goes, he got really mad. He goes, are you being let me try to read what he said. I don't want to read his, I'm trying to avoid his other email because I got mad at him and I don't want to read what he sent back to me. Actually, I deleted it because I didn't even want to see it. But he said, you know, are you being a good, you know, I don't know, person for Jesus or something? Because he goes, where in the Bible does it say just talk to Jesus and be saved, right? And I go, well, is this your first podcast that you've ever listened to? Obviously, I've gotten much deeper, and I said be baptized. Some people messaged me and said that, you know, they don't find anywhere where you actually need to be baptized to be saved. And I don't know if that's true or not, but I think you should be baptized. I think you should go to a church. If you're looking to be baptized, go to a church and say, I want to give my life to Jesus, and I want to be baptized today. And if they won't do it, find a different church. But I think there are churches that will baptize you on the spot. And I think they should. I think they should all do that. Some of them, I think, try to build up enough people to make a big showing of it. They go, we're going to have a baptism on Saturday, and a bunch of people will come. I think they should do it right then and there. But, yeah, I mean, I don't think that it's just about talking to Jesus. But my whole point was to say, get that momentum going. You're so worried about doing it perfect that you're failing to move at all. I'm saying, get that momentum going, you know? You go, you know what? I'm going to just start talking to Jesus. I'm going to start praying. You know, if you, like, people like to meditate. I say, don't meditate to nothing. Meditate to Jesus. Meditate to God. Say, I want to meditate. I want my mind to be clear, but I want it to be filled with Jesus, you know? That's what I'm saying. So, I think there is something to this. You don't have to get it right away just to make a move on it, you know? Make a move. Make it happen. There's too much, oh, well, I would do this, but I need to get this, and I need to get this. Just do it. That's what I do with this podcast. I mean, I could sit around and go, well, I need a crew, I need an editor, I need to get multiple cameras, I need to get a set designer in here, I need better lighting. And that is what I did for so long, which is why it took me so long to get my podcast on YouTube. Because I was like, ah, well, you know, I'm going to be competing in a podcast space with a lot of really famous professional comics, and they got bigger followings than me, and they got better setups and everything, and I need that. And I go, nah, you know what? I'm just going to get it going. And I've got a new studio now, and my podcast space, nothing about it has really improved. I'm just sitting in a different room. But I'm doing it. So had I been waiting for these big improvements, I never would be doing what I'm doing now. And I think my YouTube is overall doing better than ever because I'm putting this podcast on there. This podcast is not getting huge views, but I'm happy with it. I'm not part of a podcast network that's pushing me. I don't have any big business behind me pushing this podcast. It's just me. And I don't even share that much stuff. I do clips. But, you know, it's like, I've been also seeing a lot of videos about the death of comedy podcasting. I don't think that they're dying, but I think this is what a lot of people are saying, that so many podcasts went hard for politicians. And, you know, and when those politicians that they basically advocate for don't do what they said they were going to do, then you kind of lose your credibility. And, you know, I think, you know, podcasters have had politicians of both sides on their podcast. But I just think that's why you never trust any politicians. It's good for views at the time. And I don't think that a lot of people are saying Joe Rogan. I don't think this about Joe Rogan because, sure, Joe Rogan gets a lot of views when he has a big politician on, but Joe Rogan has had tons of views for a long time. But I just think, you know, there is this quest to always stay relevant that will lead you to do things that you might not normally do, and you, or you go, oh, I could make money if I did this. And, you know, they ended up taking on a lot of sponsors. Then you have a ton of sponsors. And I understand if podcasting is strictly your game and that's how you're making money, I totally get having sponsors. If I didn't have comedy that I was doing to supplement, then I would get sponsors too. So I'm not trying to say I'm better than anybody because I don't have sponsors, but I do make money doing comedy, and I do find that there should be an ad-free experience for people. Now, if you're watching this on YouTube and you're seeing ads, well, those are YouTube ads. And I don't turn those ads off. So, because, you know, you make money monetizing. Now, I don't make the kind of money that I would make if I had sponsors, but I don't want to interrupt my podcast to read sponsors. And if you have YouTube Premium, which is not that much, cancel one of your other subscriptions and get YouTube Premium. It's the best money you will ever spend. There's so much free content on YouTube. And if you buy YouTube Premium, all the ads go away. I'm not talking YouTube TV, which is pretty pricey. YouTube Premium is the best money you'll ever spend. And I think that seems like an ad for YouTube Premium. And I guess it is. Maybe they should pay me for saying that. But I think it's the best money. I try to write things down throughout the week that I think would be funny to talk about on the podcast. And I don't guess I wrote down any of those this time. But another thing for me that I take very serious is I'm doing an hour and a half at shows now because I'm writing a lot of jokes. I don't want to, you know, it's like if I write a joke that's really good, I can tell that over and over again in different cities and I get a lot of miles after the joke. But if I write something that I think is funny for the podcast and then I do it here, well, I don't get any more mileage out of it. And there's no guarantee that it's funny. Listen, I've worked with a lot of radio guys. Some of them are funny. But back in the day, I would do these road gigs, and the gig would be sponsored by a radio station, so the local DJ would be hosting the show. And they would, some of them would be the most unfunny people I've ever seen, and I think it was because they spent all their time on the radio, and they are, you know, telling jokes to avoid, not to avoid, but to an audience that's not right there, and they don't know that that audience has not been laughing at the jokes. You know what I mean? And that's what I think happens here. I mean, and I'm also doing the thing with Connor where we're doing the reaction videos. And that one's doing really well. I'm calling it, what am I calling it? Let me see. I think one goes out today. I'm trying to put them out on Tuesdays. I'm calling it Dusty Slay Reacts. But yeah, one goes out today, but you know, this is coming out Thursday. So I'm trying to put those out on Tuesdays. So I'm doing a little something different, and I think that is a little funnier than what this podcast is. But I like just having a direct line to just communicate with people and just talk to people and just spend a little time here. I think it's fun. I think it's so much fun to just get on here and talk. And yeah, I do feel a little good to be vindicated about sports being rigged. Now, nothing's come out about football yet. And if you watch Nate Land, I think Nate's right. I think college football is on the verge of becoming the better league than NFL. But I think that's because the NFL's rigged. I think stuff has come out about them saying they're rigging games for Mahomes. But I don't know. My friend Will O'Donnell told me that Kansas City is about to get the World Cup. So maybe them rigging the games for Mahomes has made the Kansas City Chiefs a really popular team. Taylor Swift going there is blowing it up, and now Kansas City is getting some bigger things. And I love Kansas City. I love Kansas City. I love doing shows there. And listen, if you see my tour schedule and you go, come to this city, come to this city, don't think that I'm ever trying to avoid a city. I'm never trying to avoid a city. But it's just like with me wanting to only do limited dates so I can be home with my family, and then the theaters, they're only wanting you to go to a city every 18 months or so. It is just harder to get around to these shows than I would like it to be. I would like to be able to do shows more often, and I think I write fast enough to where I could do shows more often in cities than every 18 months. But that's just the way it is right now. But I do want to make it back around. I do want to get back to Kansas City. There's so many places I want to go. And I also want to see new places. There's some new places I want to go to that I've never been. I've never performed in New Hampshire or Delaware or South Dakota. And I think those are the only states of the lower 48 I've never performed in. I've been to Delaware. I don't even think I've been to South Dakota or New Hampshire. So I have been to Delaware. My friend John Brennan's from Delaware, and I went through there years ago. There wasn't much to note, but it was a good time. It was a great time. Okay, well, that's the podcast for today. I appreciate you guys listening. I hope you've had fun. We're having a good time, guys. Thank you.